The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show on Unsigned, we're covering the NFL, Major League Baseball. Adele is back on stage. Jane's Addiction's new single this weekend at the box office. And we also welcome back Jeff Sack as we cover the NBA lockout. All this and much, much more tonight here on Unsigned. Hey everyone, how you doing out there? My name is Ryan. Welcome to another edition of Unsigned. Like I said at the top of the show, we got a lot of things to cover. Football, Major League Baseball, lots of things in the entertainment world as far as Jane's Addiction, Adele getting back on tour, also this weekend at the box office, and a lot of other things we'll cover as well. Some really touching stories and some funny stories as well, as we've been doing here on the show for quite some time. And I want to welcome to you now, Mr. Jeff Sack. Mr. Jeff Sack, how you doing?
Thank you, Mr. Buffer. Thank you, Mr. Buffer. I appreciate the introduction as always. What's going on, my friend?
Doing well, man. It's been a while since we've talked, and we talked on the phone today about the NBA, and that's going to be our leadoff story tonight. Kind of lurking in the background amidst of the Major League Baseball trade deadline and the NFL, clearing up their lockout and free agent frenzy that it's been, and the NBA's kind of been lurking in the shadows, approaching about 40 days now in the lockout. Not a whole lot that in the news that's been going on, but I mean, you look at the way the players union and the NBA and the owners and David Stern, they met last Monday, as you know, and basically they accomplished nothing other than basically turning it into he said, they said this, and they said that. And so when you look at this, Jeff, in the NBA office, then filing a lawsuit against the players, basically before the players could decertify the union, much like the NFL players did, where do you see the NBA right now as far as this lockout's concerned on getting a quality business deal? I'll use David Stern's terms there, a quality business deal done and getting the NBA back on track for the regular season.
I guess it's who are you listening to, Ryan? Are you listening to Billy Hunter, who said if I had to bet on it at this moment, I would probably say no? When asked, would there be any NBA games played this season? Or are we listening to LeBron James, all-star forward for the Miami Heat, former MVP when he played for the Cleveland Cavaliers, who said he's very, very optimistic and expects a deal to be signed and ratified soon and doesn't expect any of the NBA season to be lost. I don't think it's going to be either one of those extremes, to be perfectly honest with you. Both sides seem to have their feet pretty dug firmly into the ground. So I don't think we're going to miss zero games, as the NFL will do, but I would be really, truly shocked if we see the entire NBA season go down the tubes, as Mr. Hunter inferred last week. It's a very, very tough situation. There are all sorts of little side roads, little gateways that are sticking up in between. The NBA owners, in my opinion, are being extremely greedy right now and asking for far, far too many concessions from the NBA players. As we discussed earlier today in David Aldridge's column on NBA.com, he mentions a unidentified NBA owner saying that he's sick and tired of making NBA players rich. Well, I would suggest to that owner that he find himself another line of work, because that's basically why you are in business, sir, to make NBA players rich, so you can bring people into your arena, so you can get revenue coming in, so you can make yourself richer. If we get to the day where they're going to lower ticket prices back down to $5, $10 a ticket, and that would be the result of players losing a percentage of the revenue, I would be all for it. But just to see this money distributed from one pocket, i.e. the players, to another pocket, i.e. the owners. To me, it's simply not fair. It really truly isn't. We don't go to Gund Arena, Quicken Loans Arena to see Dan Gilbert. We don't go to see the Dallas Mavericks to see Mark Cuban. We don't go to see the Miami Heat to see Mickey Aronson. We could go on and on and on. We go to see these players because they are, in my opinion, the best athletes in the world, and the NBA is the most exciting game in the world. It is my favorite professional sport. We don't go to see, no matter how entertaining Mark Cuban and Dan Gilbert can be, we don't go to see them. We go to see Dirk Nowitzki. We go to see Baron Davis and whoever else we happen to root for, whether it be the Boston Celtics and the Big Three or the New York Knicks with Carmelo, Chauncey Billups, and Amari Stoudemire. Again, we don't go to see the owners. So for them to think that they are the be-all and end-all and that they don't need this caliber of player in the NBA in order for the NBA to prosper is something that if they keep on trying to go down that route, it's going to be a very, very bad road for the NBA, and they're going to wake up and find out that the NBA has been left behind by the EuroLeagues with the NBA-caliber players not playing in the EuroLeagues or in Asia.
You know, the way this is, you make some very good points, and you know, I mentioned this earlier on the phone with you about the NBA players on the average are making over around $5 million on the average, which is more than any other sport. And I think, you know, the owners making this lawsuit against the players is basically a preemptive strike. You know, we'll get to you first before you get to us scenario. I really think both sides, when you look at there's a lot of issues on the table, whether it's, you know, players, you know, contracts, the hard salary cap, and the owners seem to be very firm on this. And I think Dan Gilbert of the Cleveland Cavaliers has really spearheaded this as well. And we talked about this about a month or so ago before the lockout really took a hold of the game after the draft. We did our draft coverage. You look at the NBA, and I mentioned again this to you on the phone today. When you look at everything that's going on in sports right now, we have Major League Baseball is heading into the postseason. NFL preseason kicks off this weekend. Then you have college football, the bowl season, you have March Madness, you have the NFL playoffs, you have March Madness. There's all these different sporting events that really people love and enjoy, and college basketball is going to prosper because of this as well. When you look at all these events, World Series, NFL, March Madness, playoffs, you know, what have you, you look at all these other sporting events that are going on, the NBA really could get lost in the shuffle and then some, and if they do lose this season, how bad and how much is it really going to affect this game overall if the owners and the players don't reach a quote-unquote smart business model in this day and age and the economic struggles for the entertainment dollar the way it is?
There you go.
They have to find I don't think it's just the owners. I think it's really both sides being a little greedy as far as money and revenue and contract sharing and all the different things you talk about, but I really think the owners and the players really need to take a step back and look at what's going on in this country, one, and two, just, you know, the amount of money that is to be made and the amount of money they're making already and find a compromise. I find it hard to believe, and I don't think they're that stupid to think that they, you know, they're that great because the numbers are there, the TV ratings are up because of this season, how great it was. I find it hard to believe that they don't think that losing a season is going to jeopardize the league.
Was it Santayana who said, "Those who don't remember history are condemned to repeat it"? Happened in 1998. It was a rhetorical question. 1998, 1999, when the lockout happened the last time, and the NBA took a lot of years for it to recover. If it wasn't, and again, something we discussed this afternoon, if it wasn't for, first of all, the three-peat teams of the Los Angeles Lakers with Kobe and Shaquille, and it wasn't for the draft class of 2003 with Dwayne Wade and LeBron and Chris Bosh and Carmelo and Darko and all the rest of them, the NBA probably would not have gotten to the point that it was back in June when it had its best ratings for an NBA Finals since Michael retired. It was a very fortunate turn of events. We had two NBA finals in the last 4 years, with the Los Angeles Lakers and the Boston Celtics going up against each other, the premier matchup in the NBA by far. No other teams in the NBA have a rivalry that's anywhere close to that matchup. We had that incredible class, as I just mentioned, in 2003. And it started off with the era started off with Shaquille and Kobe winning three under Jackson the first time. And that helped revive the game as well. Well, unfortunately, Shaquille's retired now. Yao Ming is retired now, and we'll talk about this in a couple of minutes. He could be entering the Hall of Fame next year, but we'll come to that in a couple of minutes. The big three in Boston are getting older now. We don't know what lies ahead for the Los Angeles Lakers. They are very long in the tooth as well, and they've got a new coach coming in with Mike Brown. Phil Jackson won't be there any longer. Miami showed a lot this past year, but there are rumors that Chris Bosh could be on the way out, and who the heck knows what's going to be happening with that. You mentioned Dan Gilbert before, and from all my sources and everybody I've talked to in Cleveland, he seems to be at the forefront of trying to push this thing for a hard salary cap, just so there cannot be a repeat of Miami down the line, whether it be New York, if they sign Chris Paul or Deron Williams, or another team. Unfortunately, by doing that, you're only basically cutting off your nose to spite your face, because Gilbert right now is in a rebuild situation, and he wants to get better as quickly as possible, and without free agency, he's going to be hamstrung. So what I have proposed, and we talked about this a little bit the last time I was on, is let's get a franchise player per NBA team, so that you can't have a repeat of what happened last year with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Phoenix Suns losing Amari and the Toronto Raptors losing Chris Bosh, and allow these players to be franchised for, let's say, a year, possibly 3 years, give that team a chance to get themselves into a title contention scenario. And if they don't do it by then, well, they either lose a player due to free agency, or smartly, they trade the player like Denver did with Carmelo and Chauncey Billups this past year, or like Utah did with Deron Williams this past year as well, and you reload for tomorrow. I think that's the most fair and most equitable way of solving this problem. Rather than worrying about taking money from the individual players, make it so that these guys who have come up with small market teams are basically obligated to stay with them a little bit longer than your average player. You make them a franchise player, you've got to pay them the top salary, or let's say the top three salaries in the NBA at that position, and you have a chance to rebuild, and if not, they don't sign a long-term contract with you, and you know they're going to go, so you trade them like Utah and Denver did this past season. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I agree with that. I like the franchise tag a lot. I don't know if they'll be able to do 3 years. I don't know if the players will agree to that, but at least one, maybe two, maybe having the second year as a restricted free agent option for the team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they could structure it that way, but definitely 1 year I think is very fair, because I think it gives the mid-market teams like Cleveland, like Oklahoma City, and some of the others really a fighting chance. So, you know, you don't end up with what you could end, you know, what kind of is, I think, where the league is trending, where it's become schedule fillers. You know, you have basically a handful of teams that are viable, that really have a chance to win it, and the rest is really schedule fillers. I think you have to try to build parity, much like the NFL has. Because, I mean, every year there's new teams in the playoffs. And I think the NBA should, you know, look at that type of model of building parity with the franchise tag and you know, changing the way contracts and the length of contracts are worked and how it's paid out, and go from there. Now, go ahead.
First of all, as we talked about on the phone earlier today, nobody has ever stuck a gun to one of these owners' heads or one of these general managers' heads and forced them to make an offer to an NBA player. The owners and the NBA general managers only have themselves to blame for allowing the genie to get out of the bottle. It's as simple as that. And basically what the NBA is asking for now is the players to save them from themselves. And what other business in the world, other than sports, would that be a viable option? Would movie stars or television stars or recording artists ever agree to something like that? Of course they wouldn't. Would laborers and factories agree to something like that? Of course they wouldn't. Would teachers allow themselves to be restricted like that? Of course they wouldn't. The problem is your product is your personnel. You've got the players, which is the reason why people come to Quicken Loans Arena or Boston Garden or Madison Square Garden or Phillips Arena in Atlanta, to see these players. And as long as they do, and as long as you're charging the outlandish and outrageous sum that you are for tickets and concessions and doodads, memorabilia, and things like that, then your players are going to be making an awful lot of money, and deservedly so. Now, you want to reduce the price of everything else? Fine. But that's not going to happen. We all know. The owners aren't going to take less money.
No, you're 100% right. The owners are not going to reduce ticket sales. They're not going to lower the 16-ounce glass of beer to $2 or $3. They're going to keep it at $7 or $8. And, you know, the, you know, 24-ounce soda is still going to be $5 or $6, and your small bag of popcorn is still going to be $7, $8. So, yeah, those type of things are not going to happen. The owners, basically, they want more than what the players are willing to give up, and the players don't want to give up any because they've been, you know, basically they've had it pretty good under this current agreement. It's just a real big mess. It will be interesting to see if they ever come to a deal, hopefully sooner than later, but it remains to be seen. Thanks for joining us here tonight. This is Ryan on Unsigned. We have our special guest, Jeff Sack. Now, Jeff, kind of switching gears on you a little bit here. I said about a month or so ago that, you know, with the lockout looming, you may see players jumping overseas. And sure enough, you have Deron Williams signing the deal, really the biggest superstar as of yet, to really sign a deal and confirm that he's going to go play in Turkey. A lot of other players are jumping ship. Over 25 players I counted today actually have deals done with teams in the EuroLeagues. Obviously, Deron Williams, again, the only superstar of the group thus far. How do you see the NBA, if they do seal up the lockout, let's say the lockout's over and you have some of these guys who have agreed to one-year terms with these EuroLeagues that do not have a lockout or do not have an opt-out option on their contract, how do you see the players' union dealing with these players if the players are currently under contract with a team in the NBA?
Well, in order for a player to sign a contract with either a EuroLeague team or an Asian team or an African team or what have you, FIBA has made sure that there has to be an NBAL clause in any player that currently is under contract to an NBA team. So Deron Williams, being a member of the New Jersey Nets, has an opt-out clause if the strike is settled. The lockout is settled. It's not a strike. It's a lockout. It's a work stoppage. But it's not a strike. The players aren't causing it. The owners are. So let's use the right terminology, and I'm sorry about that.
That's right.
However, there are other players that are either restricted free agents or total free agents who have signed a contract for a year, as Nenad Krstić has with Moscow, and he will be property of Moscow no matter what happens with the work stoppage. And he probably would have signed that contract regardless of what was going on with the NBA because he never really found that place ever since he left the New Jersey Nets that he felt really comfortable. Of course, he was with Oklahoma City up until the Boston Celtics traded for him back in February, and he started out great for the Boston Celtics and then kind of got lost in the shuffle as we got into the playoffs. He's made that jump once before after he left the Nets, and was in Eastern Europe for a couple of years, and then came back to the NBA, and of course, as I just mentioned, played for Oklahoma City and then Boston last year. But I think he would have made that kind of a deal anyways. Guys like Nicolas Batum, who was originally from France, and a lot of the other players that are signing contracts without NBA opt-out clauses are from Europe anyways, or the borderline talents, like a Sonny Weems from Toronto, who's not going to get a really big deal out of an NBA team, but could maybe make himself a little extra cash by signing with a European team and maybe making a bigger name for himself, because he's going to be surrounded by lesser talent in the EuroLeague than he is in the NBA. Maybe that drives up his price as a free agent next year. Who knows? So you've got the bulk of the players who are now talking about it, whether it be Kobe, whether it be Dwayne Wade, whether it be Amari and Carmelo, who have talked about possibly playing in China. These guys are all signed to NBA teams, so they must sign any contract that they sign has to have an NBA opt-out clause. If it doesn't, they can't sign the contract. It's as simple as that. That's what FIBA has allowed. Now, I was pretty surprised that FIBA did. I'm sorry, did I interrupt you?
No, you're fine. Good.
I was pretty surprised that FIBA did rule the way they did. I really expected the NBA to put up more of a fight, and they had a meeting with FIBA just about a week before the ruling came down, and the NBA has not made any statements condemning FIBA or saying that they've got a problem with NBA players playing elsewhere during a lockout. Again, we talked about just a couple of minutes ago the lawsuit that the NBA owners have filed against the players, and as you mentioned, it's a preemptive move just because the NBA owners did not want the NBA Players Association to disassemble itself and then allow the players to sue the NBA in an antitrust lawsuit. They don't want those books to be open because all of a sudden we're finding out that the last 2 years at least, the NBA has made a profit. And in spite of what David Stern and the owners are saying, that 22 of 30 teams are losing money every year, at least the last 2 years, that's not the case. So how much truth is it to, you know, David Stern and the owner's scenario? You know, there's all sorts of ways you can cook the books and things like that. I'm not an accountant. I'm not a CPA, so I don't really know the ins and outs of it. But we hear all the time about two sets of books and things like that. I would not put it past the NBA or some of their maybe slimier owners for possibly doing that. I'm not going to mention any names because I don't want to be sued, to be perfectly honest with you. But it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility by any stretch of the imagination. So they don't want those books open. But as I said, it really shocked me when FIBA ruled the way they did, and I thought that was the trump card for the NBA players. Now the owners basically have been chastened because one of their main weapons, no revenue coming in for the players, has now been taken away from them because a lot of these guys are going to sign with European or Asian or African teams and will still make money, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit more in some cases. It's said that Kobe wants to sign for $1 million a month with Turkey or whoever he signs with. That's quite a bit of money. That's quite a bit of money. So, you know, he won't have any problems. I know Williams got $5 million from Besiktas to sign with them. D. Wade says that he will sign with another team if the NBA lockout does go into the regular season. So a lot of these guys are going to get money. The NBA lost a main weapon when that ruling came about, and I'm really surprised that the NBA as an entity hasn't tried to get back to the bargaining table and maybe start trying to negotiate a little bit more in good faith with the players than they have been previously once that ruling has happened. So far, that hasn't happened. We'll see when they get back to the bargaining table in the next couple of weeks if that does have an effect.
You would think that it would, but again, you have some owners who are taking a hard stance, a la Dan Gilbert and others, and you have others, owners who are on the other side of the fence of it. It doesn't look good.
And that's
good
what
now.
Billy Hunter.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what Billy Hunter alluded to when he made the statement about that he would not bet that any NBA games would be played this year. He talked about the last lockout, 98-99, and basically exonerated David Stern by saying a lot of these new owners are holding Stern's feet to the fire and not allowing him to make a deal that he believes is right. There's been a lot of ownership changes in the last few years, my friend, a lot of ownership changes, and we've got one right now in the offing. As the Atlanta Hawks look like they're going to be sold anytime now, all it needs is approval from the NBA Board of Governors. So there's a way different cast of characters than there was back in 98, 99, and a lot of these guys did not sit through the last lockout. So, again, you know, ignorance is bliss, but not when it comes and bites you in the fanny, and that is what could happen come, you know, February, March, or April, if the NBA lockout is not settled by then.
Well, let's hope it doesn't go that long. Now, do you think, I mean, David Stern has been the commissioner of the NBA for a long time, and I think he's done some good things for the association as a whole. Do you think after or when they finally reach a new agreement, do you think he'll finally step down?
No, because he's still full of himself. David Stern is the smartest man in the room, and he's the first one to tell you that. I've had the pleasure, and I use the word very, very loosely, of interviewing Mr. Stern a number of times at Gund Arena and then Quicken Loans Arena, and he truly is just a nauseating New York lawyer who is totally sold on himself and has an ego the size of Detroit. So I don't think he's ready to step down as of yet. I would love to see it. I've talked about Bill Bradley in the past as a guy that I would love to see as the new commissioner of the NBA. There are other guys out there with sterling records who would make great commissioners. But David Stern isn't ready to retire anytime soon. I think at least another 5 years and possibly another 10.
Wow. Yeah, like I said, Stern is a very smug character. Anytime you see him in an interview, I don't know. I think that part of me thinks that he may, you know, this may take a lot out of him. Maybe he'll finally walk away, but I guess that's me just kind of hoping.
I don't see it in the cards. Now, I've been wrong before. I thought LeBron was going to stay with Cleveland. I mean, I can use that as a perfect example, but I don't see it in the cards.
Yeah, I think that's more wishing on my part. I mean, he's done some good things, don't get me wrong, but he is, you know, through the two lockouts that we've had as him as a commissioner in the last, you know, really decade and change, he's, you know, hurt the league in a lot of ways and has helped the league in a lot of ways.
There's a lot of stupid moves he's made over the years. You know, ticky-tacky little things like, you know, length of the player's shorts. You know, come on. We've got a lot more things to worry about than length of the player's shorts. Gilbert Arenas not talking to the NBA press before the gun incident during the preseason a couple of years ago, and him being fined for something like that. I mean, stupid stuff that Stern has really no reason interfering in whatsoever. And, I mean, we went 3 years with Manny Ramirez in the Indians locker room without him talking to us at all. And the first interview I got with Manny in about 5 years was when he first put on a Boston uniform and came back to Jacobs Field. So, you know, for Gilbert Arenas not to talk during a preseason exhibition game and getting fined for it, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. I'm not a big fan of David Stern. I think he has opened up the NBA to a broader market worldwide, internationally. I think it is being marketed far, far better now than it was under Larry O'Brien or even 20 years ago under Stern. But a lot of that has to do with the times we live in and the you know, the advents of the of the internet and things like that. You know, China has become a huge NBA market since Yao Ming, and it was reinforced back in 2008 when the Olympics were held in Beijing. Kobe is now considered a demigod in China, and a lot of other NBA players are as well. So you've opened up a huge market there. You know, it's really being marketed very, very well on an international basis, but it still isn't really being marketed that well here in the States, and it's a third sport at best, and unfortunately, they're not going to be able to survive a year-long lockout, work stoppage, whatever you want to call it, like the NFL could. If the NFL struck for a year, the fans would be back. Within a year, the fans would be back. There's no doubt in my mind that NFL fans would be like lemmings to the sea and go right back to the NFL once that lockout ended. But if the NBA ends up being locked out for a year, it's a whole different story. It's not the same kind of passion that the United States sports fan, except in rare occasions like myself, have for the NBA that most sports fans have for the NFL. You can't compare the two. A lot of NBA fans are casual fans. They've come, as we talked about just a couple of minutes ago, because of the last few finals. They've come because of LeBron James. They've come because of Dwayne Wade. They've come because of Carmelo and Dirk Nowitzki and Amare and guys like that. But if they're turned off for a year, they're going to find another place to spend that entertainment dollar, especially in the economy as bad as it is right now. We've got the possibility of going back into a huge recession, just like this country did in 1937 right now, and especially what Congress did last week. So that entertainment dollar is going to get tighter and tighter and tighter. And if you take away that option for a year, what's to say that fans are going to want it back when you bring it back a year later?
I'm 100% in agreement with you. I'm a hardcore fan like you are as far as the NBA is concerned. I love basketball. I love the NBA. I'll be back. I know you will be. But I can't say the same for most of the people that I know who follow the game or, you know, at least check the sports page every couple weeks or so to see what their favorite team is doing. Those fans are not going to be around. Those fans are not going to drop the $50, $60, $70, $80, $100 and sometimes even more to go to a game. They're just not going to do it. It remains to be seen. Hopefully, again, that they work something out and let's have a season. Now, there's some other NBA news you want to talk about, Jeff. This is Ryan here on Unsigned. Everyone, thanks for joining us this evening. You have Jeff Sack on with us. Now, you had an article about the New York Knicks and Phil Jackson possibly coming out of retirement and joining the Knicks. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it came about because Mike D'Antoni right now, who is their head coach and will be for the next year, at least he's under contract for the next year, is looking for a defensive coach because D'Antoni's forte has never been defense, as we are well aware from his days with the Phoenix Sun as well as the New York Knicks. And he's looking for a defensive coach right now, and one of the candidates is former Hawks coach Mike Woodson. And a gentleman by the name of Mr. Hahn from Newsday came up with the following. Alan Hahn from Newsday came up with the following quote in his story. Some suggest Woodson, who had some success with the Atlanta Hawks, would be a bit of a threat to D'Antoni. But in all honesty, no one will cast a greater shadow over D'Antoni through the coming year than Phil Jackson. Now, let's think about this for a second. Let's not dismiss this out of whole cloth by any stretch of the imagination. Phil Jackson, the most successful coach of the modern era. The only other coach that stands close to him is Red Auerbach with the Boston Celtics, who won 9 championships in 11 years on the bench. Phil has now won 11 NBA championships. Coach of the Year a couple of times, won 6 with the Chicago Bulls, won 5 with the Los Angeles Lakers, retired. He's already in the Basketball Hall of Fame. The guy can retire to a beach in Hawaii for the rest of his life, and he really has no other mountains to climb except for the fact that the New York Knicks are the team he used to play with. He played with the New York Knicks from 1977 to 1988, and, excuse me, 1967 to 1978, and was a member of the championship team the last time the Knicks won a championship during the Willis Reed Clyde Frazier era. Now the New York Knicks have been basically a lackluster team over the last few years. You know, they had some success under Pat Riley a few years ago during the Patrick Ewing era, but they never really came close to winning an NBA Finals. To bring the New York Knicks a championship, to bring prestige to a team in New York, like Phil Jackson has the capability of doing, and with that young nucleus, and especially now augmented by Carmelo, Chauncey Billups, and Amare, what's to say that Phil wouldn't come back to try to climb that last mountain? And what a perfect way to end his NBA career by bringing back prestige and an NBA title to the New York Knicks. I can't think of a better way for this man to retire.
You know what? I like it. I really do. And I think the only reason he would do it is because there's actual talent, championship talent on that roster. That'd be the only reason. A few tweaks here and there, and that roster is right there. Now you add some perimeter defense and get a big guy in the middle so Amari can play power forward. You're right there. I mean, because Carmelo is as good as anybody in the league as far as scoring in the mid range. The guy can take it to the basket. The guy can score 40 a night in a blink of an eye. And Amari can, you know, is solid. I mean, I think he's a walking double-double pretty much whenever he's motivated. And I think Phil Jackson would be able to pull the right strings and really motivate Amari to be the Moses Malone type player that I think he is.
Absolutely. You've got two perennial all-stars right there. You haven't even mentioned Chauncey Billups yet, who we discussed this afternoon, and we both think he has another couple of years left in the tank. There were rumors about Chris Paul or Deron Williams going to New York in 12, which would then give you three of the best players in the NBA, no ands, ifs, or buts about it, and make them the prohibitive favorite to win a bunch of titles for the next few years. And especially if you've got a coach like Phil Jackson at the helm, and he brings Brian Shaw with him as his assistant, and allows Brian to stand in the wings for a few years while Phil racks up a couple of trophies, and then Brian takes over. Win-win situation for everybody involved. James Dolan gets his name out of the toilet where it's been in New York for the last few years since he hired Isaiah Thomas, and the New York Knicks become a prestigious franchise, just like the New York media has always wanted them to be, and they've never really been. They are nowhere near a Boston Celtics, a Los Angeles Lakers, not to mention the fact that teams like Chicago, San Antonio, Detroit, and Houston have won multiple titles over the last few years, and the New York Knicks have not won anything since 1973. They are not a critical member of the NBA. It's not like the New York Yankees are in Major League Baseball, or even like the New York Giants are in the NFL. You know, two stalwart franchises, two franchises with incredible, incredible histories. The New York Knicks are not like that. The NBA has been as successful as it has been over the last, let's say, 30 years, since 1981, because of guys like Magic and guys like Michael and guys like Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers and the Chicago Bulls and Hakeem Olajuwon and David Robinson and Tim Duncan and Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars, and we can go on and on and on and on. But the New York Knicks have not entered into that. They've had a couple of good players over the years, Bernard King, Patrick Ewing, Mark Jackson, but they've never been close enough to get that title. And Phil Jackson could do it and really turn the Knicks into a powerhouse for the next few years.
Yeah, very good stuff. Well, Jeff, any other things you'd like to bring up here tonight since we're talking NBA?
The only other thing I'd like to talk about, my friend, is The young man over in Atlanta who is poised right now to become the next owner of the Atlanta Hawks, Alex Morello, who is a really great, great story. This is a kid whose parents came here from Cuba 50 years ago today, 1961. A couple of years later, he's born in Miami. They moved to New York, then they moved to Southern California. A real rags-to-riches story. This kid opened up his first pizza shop in 1985 at 21 years of age. He now has over 50 shops in Southern California, and he's diversified incredibly over the last few years. Company's holdings include a bank as well as a hotel and casino located in Reno, Nevada, and a Spanish-language TV station in Los Angeles. However, owning a club in the association, he says, has always been a dream of mine and a passion, and you'll definitely see that as I become hopefully the owner in a short period of time, I want to bring a championship to the city of Atlanta. What a great, great story. What a real, you know, American dream story this is. He will become the first majority owner of an NBA team of Hispanic descent. And I just think it's a great story, and this guy seems like a real stand-up guy, and he's conducted his businesses well over the years. He's made a lot of money, and now he gets the chance to get a great toy to play with. And the Atlanta Hawks are a team that's been up and coming the last few years. They've got Joe Johnson. They've got Al Horford. Hopefully these guys like anchovies. they've got Larry Drew as the coach. They discovered some success, especially in the first round against the Orlando Magic in the playoffs this past year. They're a team that will remain among the contenders, and if Alex can put in a little bit more cash and get some people in the seats, you could see that team among the NBA elite for the next few years to come as well. So very, very pleased to hear about that, and a very nice story. When we don't hear too many nice stories the last few months about the NBA, speaking of a not nice story, old friend of ours, he used to play for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Darius Miles, got busted last week in St. Louis at Lambert Airport as he decided to try to board a plane with a loaded gun in his pocket.
Dope.
Darius is a strange cat. And I don't use that phrase often, but Darius is truly a strange cat. When he played for the Cleveland Cavaliers, it was a night in February, and we were talking with him, and there was probably about four or five of us, and including myself and Bob Finan and of News Herald and Branson Wright of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and we were talking about the grind of the NBA season, and I asked him a question, and D. Miles looked at me and basically said, "There are some games where I basically don't try. I just go out there and I just kind of, go out on the court and I don't try." And I realized what he was saying and didn't think he realized what he was saying. And I tried to save him, tried to take him off the hook. I don't remember how I phrased the question, but I tried to take him off the hook. Nope. Wouldn't take the life preserver by any stretch of the imagination. Dug himself even further into the hole. You may remember that Darius Miles was traded a little while later to the Portland Trail Blazers for Flip Murray, who ended up with the Cavaliers for about 10 games, and has been a free agent going vagabond from team to team ever since. And Darius Miles was out of the NBA a couple of years later. Basically because his health had failed him and he never learned how to really play the game. He was a great athlete, got picked with the number 3 pick out of high school, but he never really learned the dynamics of the game. And other than being a great athlete, he never really learned how to play basketball. And now it's come down to this. It's a sad, sad story. D-Miles is a good guy. I liked him a lot. I thought he was very foolish when he said what he said, but you don't like to see guys that get into scrapes like this, and I felt very, very badly. Kind of how I felt with Delonte West when he got busted, a couple of years ago, strapped down with guns. Another guy who was just a guy who I always liked and had some problems, but always stuck up for the guy. And luckily, he found some success last year with the Boston Celtics, and hopefully he'll be back with them again this year. He is an unrestricted free agent. We won't know about any of that, of course, until the other side of the lockout. But it's sad when you see guys that you know, guys that you used to interview, guys that you used to work with on a long-term basis, whether they be for the Cavaliers like Darius Miles or seeing them with the Boston Celtics, as I did with Delonte, to see these guys get in trouble, it really makes you feel bad. It really truly does.
Yeah, I think that, you know, some of these guys enter the league and, are very young, much like Miles was, you know, coming out of high school, or just, you know, immature, and they get a lot of money and, you know, just never really fully appreciate some of the gifts and opportunities that are granted to them, unfortunately. Well, hey, Jeff, good stuff as always, man. Thank you for coming on the show again. If our listeners want to get a hold of, you know, of you, or you'll want to keep abreast of what's going on in the NBA throughout the lockout, what's the website they can check out?
I appreciate the shameless plug, as always, my brother. You can go to nbaovertime.wordpress.com. Our URL number. We are NBA Overtime, your number one source for NBA information. Just about everything that we talked about tonight is represented right now on the site, Ryan. And we're not taking a day off, even though the NBA is. We've got something new and exciting up on the site each and every day. Numbers have been fantastic. I'm very, very pleased and very, very proud that the numbers have been as good as they have been, especially over the last couple of weeks when, there's been the bad news by Mr. Hunter as such. And now, we don't know where a lot of NBA players are going to be playing because of the FIBA ruling. But our numbers have been fantastic, and we appreciate the support from our readership. And hopefully a lot of them are out there right now listening to us, because we wrote a little article promoting my appearance on your show tonight. So hopefully we've got a lot of listeners from NBA Overtime right now on the podcast, and they're enjoying this. And come and visit us anytime. That's NBA Overtime, nbaovertime.wordpress.com, your number one source for NBA information.
Wait, Jeff, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. As you know, we always love having you on. We'd definitely love to have you back on again. And we, Mike and I appreciate, any article you've wrote about the show and any, publicity and plugs that you've, given to us as well. So thank you as always, my friend. And anytime you want to come on the show, you're more than welcome to.
I appreciate that, my friend. The compliments are heartfelt and heart-sent. You and Mike do a great, great job running this. And, I've listened to a few of your episodes, even when I'm not on the air, and a superb, superb job. Very, very entertaining, very informative, and very educational. And those are the three things that you've got to cover. I used to tell you that when you were a student. If you can educate, and inform, then you're ahead of the game. And that's why you will get listeners or viewers. And that's why this show is as great as it is, because you do all those things. You entertain, you educate, and you inform, my friend.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate it. And we're hitting it like Barry Bonds here on the show, without the juice, of course. So,
and our heads aren't that big.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know. My wife said I kind of have a big head, and I was like, well, a six-pack doesn't fit quite in my hat yet, so I think I'm safe. So,
there you go.
All right. Well, hey, Jeff, thanks again for coming on, man. Be well.
You too. My best to everybody, including Carolyn, please.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody. That was the one and only Mr. Jeff Sack. Doesn't get any better than that. Former teacher of mine, former colleague of mine. Always a pleasure to have someone like that on the show here on Unsigned. Breaking down, we haven't talked NBA a lot on the show, and it was very nice to have Jeff come on and really break down everything that's going on in the NBA and the NBA lockout as it stands right now. Now, stick with us tonight. We have a lot of other things we want to cover. We have a section of the show I titled Off the Path. This is where we kind of take a step back from sports and we talk about non-sports related topics. So I got some things for you tonight. We'll do the movies like we always do, but I want to lead off with a very interesting story I came across. Early Alfred Hitchcock film, which is titled The White Shadow, which features Betty Compson playing twins, one angelic and one is devilish. Unfortunately, only the first three of the six reels have been located, so the ending will be left to your imagination. The White Shadow was among many silent era films salvaged by New Zealand projectionist and collector Jack Mazark. After his death in 1989, the highly flammable nitrate prints were sent to the film archive for safekeeping by Tony Osborne, the collector's grandson. The Hitchcock film is just one of the treasures uncovered, including John Ford's Upstream. Now, I don't know if they're going to try to remaster, reproduce, or release this film, but I thought it was a very interesting story that, you know, an Alfred Hitchcock film that really no one has ever seen, titled The White Shadow, was recovered thanks to this gentleman in New Zealand who just happened to collect old films. I thought it was a very interesting story. Moving on here tonight on Off the Path, a sad story. Mr. Bubba Smith, former NFL star who made a success jumping into acting, originally started as doing Miller Lite commercials as well, and also did Police Academy movies. Mr. Bubba Smith died at the age of 66 years old. He was born Charles Aaron Smith, 6'7" football player who made his trademark at Michigan State, where the crowd used to cheer "Kill Bubba, kill." Kill Bubba Kill. He was a mentor of Sparty at Michigan State. He became a Pro Bowler in the NFL. He earned a Super Bowl ring with the Baltimore Colts in 1970, followed by some stints with the Oakland Raiders and the then Houston Oilers, who are now the Tennessee Titans. After retiring in 1976, he pursued a career in entertaining in the entertainment industry and began appearing in small roles such as Good Times, Charlie's Angels, and Taxi. Some of our older listeners, no offense, will remember stints of Mr. Bubba Smith in those. His popularity really took off after the Miller Lite commercials with fellow NFL great Dick Butkus and John Madden in the early 80s. Now, then at that point, his greatest mark on the big screen came as Moses Hightower, as the gentle giant cadet, along with Steve Guttenberg and Kim Cattrall and the rest of the bumbling recruits who busted bad guys in 1984 classic Police Academy. The film was such a hit that it actually they did five sequels of the movie, Police Academy 5. Anyone remember that? But anyway, he was great in those movies. Very funny guy, followed by a great cast. He not only was, really a gentle giant, but was, a well-liked individual, and also really was underrated as a comedian on screen. Recent credits for Mr. Bubba Smith include Married with Children, which appeared on Fox, the ABC show Family Matters, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and also last year's indie horror film Blood River. I'm going to probably check out the indie horror film Blood River. Sabrina the Teenage Witch, I believe, is how it's pronounced. Moving on to and off the path. This is an artist I really, really enjoy. Her name is Adele. She took a break from her tour because, she was battling a very severe bout of laryngitis. And it sidelined her for nearly a month to postpone a lot of her North American tour. The British hitmaker resumed performing this past Thursday night, headlining London's iTunes Festival. Now, the biggest surprise, not only of her, getting back on tour and being healthy again, but also her effort in her sophomore album titled 21 became the fastest selling digital album to surpass 1 million units stateside. The record, which dropped about 4 months ago, has already sold. Now, get this. The album 21 is 4 months old, has sold 2.5 million copies in the United States, has sold 9 million copies worldwide, and has spent a whopping 10 weeks at the top of the Billboard charts, bumping off Lady Gaga, Born This Way. Adele's latest single, Rolling in the Deep, was recently certified quadruple platinum for digital sales, topping over 4 million. Now, the singer made light of her illness, telling the audience that she had temporarily stopped boozing to rest her pipes, but she did add that she would much rather be drinking some red wine. So if you haven't heard Adele's album, you haven't heard any of her music, good luck getting a ticket, one. If you're just now finding out that she's coming to your town, if you can find a ticket, amazing. But finding a ticket's going to be tough. If you haven't heard Adele and you haven't heard this woman's voice and the way that she performs her music, I highly recommend that you check it out. When the album first came out, 21, she was doing the circuit of, the Today Show and doing Jimmy Fallon and Jay Leno and Letterman and all that. Now, usually when you see these artists, they do these shows. It's the same, they play the single. It's the same arrangement. It's the same way. And they just kind of hammer them out. Bap, bap, bap. Not Adele. Adele is not like that. Adele went on the Today Show, played the song, saw her on Letterman, did the same song, but changed the arrangement, changed the solos. So a real true artist, Adele, one of a kind. So definitely check that album out, 21, if you get a chance. Here's a story that made me laugh. The band Outkast, everybody remembers the Outkast in the early 2000s. They made tons of money. They sold millions of albums. The guy Big Boi, who was one half of the duo Outkast, is basically been out. He did a solo album, which a lot of people seem to like. He was actually arrested in Miami on drug charges for having ecstasy pills, which is an MDA powder, which is the main ingredient in ecstasy, and also illegal possession of Viagra to boot, and also drug paraphernalia. Police confirmed that the rapper, whose real name is Atuan Patton, was booked Sunday in Miami with possession and intent to distribute, but was released on a $16,000 bond. Now, there was no immediate comment from the rapper's representatives. Now, this is about third or fourth week where we've had like a really interesting story about either an athlete or a musician, obtaining some type of illegal substance. Last week we did the Samaki Walker story, former Los Angeles Laker who was busted while eating his own pot and liquid steroids. Then we had the bassist from Coheed and Cambria, the metal band, who basically knocked off a Walgreens for some OxyContin. I mean, these guys basically have their own pharmaceutical company going right now. I mean, you wake up in the morning, you get your workout with Samaki Walker steroids, you get all pumped up, you do an afternoon thing, smoke some pot, watch some Star Trek, and then, you want to go out in the evening, you eat some ecstasy pills, you go to a rave and you dance around to techno music. Thank you, Big Boi. And then also, hey, while you're at the rave, you pick somebody up, you get some Viagra, you pop the little blue pill, you have yourself a nice evening. The evening's winding down, you can't sleep. Well, hey, guess what? The bassist from Coheed and Cambria has you covered with some OxyContin. Here, take this. This will help you sleep. These guys have their own pharmaceutical company. It's called Got What You Need. You remember that that Biz Markie song, Got What You Need? Anybody? I'm going to do this. You got what I need. You say it's ecstasy. You say it's ecstasy. Oh, Big Boi. You got what I need. You say it's just a blue pill. You say it's just Viagra. Oh, Big Boi. You got what I need. Yes, I just did do that. I'm moving on tonight on Off the Path. We do our top movies at the box office. We do this every week on the show. We'll start from number 10. We'll work our way up. Also, I have a review of Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I did have the liberty of seeing this past weekend. We'll start with number 10, Transformers, still holding in the top 10. Also, the movie Horrible Bosses, which I've heard is actually rather funny. Jennifer Aniston playing a sex-crazed dentist. Can't go wrong there. $4.5 million. Friends with Benefits, Justin Timberlake film, $4.6 million. Crazy Stupid Love at $12 million. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. I gave my review last week on that that movie, $12.4 million. Captain America, The Avenger, which I also did a review on a couple weeks ago, at $13 million. The movie The Change-Up, $13.5 million. The movie Cowboys and Aliens. Now, Cowboys and Aliens, I would like to go see this film, ends up making $15.7 million. And for the second week in a row, they are beat by the Smurfs by $20.7 million. And if you listened to the show last week, I said, just stack me three apples high, $20.7 million. Now, the number one movie, no surprise here, Rise of the Planet of the Apes at $54.8 million. I think it would have been more if people would come to their senses and not go see the Smurfs film. With that being said, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. This movie, forget about the one that was done several years ago with Mark Wahlberg. Throw that movie out. Forget about that. Forget it exists. You look at Rise of the Planet of the Apes. This movie, from start to finish, story-wise, talking story and plot, is phenomenal, top-notch filmmaking. the animation of the apes, the chimps, and the monkeys in this film, unbelievable. They were probably going to win awards with this film on how well they did portraying the animation. Cinematography is phenomenal. The acting is great. Again, the story is very, very good. There's a lot of layers to the story. The character development is bar none. Very good. You get to know the characters, even the apes and the chimps, the monkeys. The character development and how their personality is portrayed with really out any vocals whatsoever is very well done. And also sets up for a phenomenal second film in the series, which I would guess they're going to do the way that movie ends. I don't want to give it away, but that is definitely the movie to go see. If you're going to go catch a movie this weekend, I say Rise of the Planet of the Apes gets the unsigned clap movie approval. $54.8 million opening weekend. Can't go wrong with that. Very solid film. That concludes our section of Off the Path tonight here on Unsigned. Now, Major League Baseball, you got about 40-some-odd games left, and we're going to break down the standings here in our Major League Baseball recap like we do every week. We'll start with the American League East. The Boston Red Sox, who came from behind last night to beat the Minnesota Twins, really have this division locked up. They've proved they can really handle the New York Yankees. They only have a game and a half lead, but they have really proved they are World Series contenders at 71-43 with a game and a half lead. Now, the New York Yankees, not to be outdone. Again, they're right there with striking distance, only a game and a half out. Most of, pretty much have been there all year. I really think that the Yankees' lack of pitching and some of the issues they've had in the clubhouse and the Alex Rodriguez gambling, I'll call it a gambling scandal, the fact that he wasn't suspended yet is amazing. He's been warned once not to be at these high-stake poker games. He was caught again in a high-stake poker game with actors, actresses, and those are not the people that Major League Baseball is worried about. The people they're worried about is the people who are not actors and actresses who are professional gamblers and bookies. I'll ask Pete Rose how that'll hurt you. So Alex Rodriguez walking the fine line there. There's been rumored of drugs taking place, not with Alex Rodriguez, but the fact that you're around that type of scenario as a professional baseball player, I think he's made enough money, right? He doesn't need to play poker, I don't think. It's a big no-no in baseball. Gambling in baseball, if you learned anything, A-Rod, look at Pete Rose, for Christ's sakes. Moving on with the AL Central. This has become a very interesting race. The Chicago White Sox, only five games out, one game behind the second-place Indians. Now, the Indians, who were playing the Detroit Tigers tonight, they were in a rain delay. Last I checked, the score was 2-2. We're going to try to get a score update on that. But the Indians, they played seven games on the road, four against the first-place Red Sox, three against the Texas Rangers, all on the road. The Indians end up going 3-4 and are really right there. They have, again, they're four games out of the Detroit Tigers, who they're playing tonight, the first-place Tigers. 12 out of their 48 games are against the Detroit Tigers. The young Indians, I think, have proven that they are the real deal. If they can find a way to get some hitting and win some of these head-to-head contests against the Tigers, they're only four games out, 48 games left on their schedule, I think the Indians can find a way to get themselves in the pennant and get themselves in the playoffs. And with the pitching they've added, the bullpen and Perez, even though he gave up the home run the other night, the guy's only blown three games all year. The Indians are a scary, scary pennant team. Once you get in the playoffs, all bets are off. Now you look at the AL West. Again, this is also a tight race, much like the AL East. The Rangers are 5-5 out of their last 10, pretty much .500 baseball, and the Indians gave them all they could handle. They were lucky to win any of those games. And the Los Angeles, the Anaheim Angels, who, they don't swing the bat real well, but they have great pitching, and they've stayed close, only a game and a half out from the Rangers. And they've won six out of their last 10. Again, another team right there on the cusp. Interesting to see how these two division races are really good. Actually, all three of them are very, very close. Only four games separate them. Now we head to the National League. The Philadelphia Phillies, best record in baseball at 75-40. They have the best starting pitching rotation in baseball. Their only Achilles heel, I would say, at this point for the Philadelphia Phillies is their bullpen. Could be their downfall when they get into the playoffs. That remains to be seen. That could be their Achilles heel. Now, the Atlanta Braves, don't sleep on the Atlanta Braves. They've been hot. They've been solid all year long. They have a hitter, Ugly. who has a 30-game hit streak going on currently going into tonight, and they are going to be one of the toughest wild card teams you're ever going to see in Major League Baseball in the postseason. Now you move to the NL Central. Now, remember a couple weeks ago when it was a four-team race and it was all locked up and you didn't know who was going to come out of it? Well, since then, the Pittsburgh Pirates have lost 9 out of the last 10 and have fallen 9.5 games out of first place. So you pretty much scratched them off the list. It's basically – and the Reds, same thing. They've been floating around five. They're sub-500 now. They're 500 out of their last 10. Their road record is horrendous. The Reds are out of it. At this point, 10 games out, I don't see them covering that ground. It basically comes down to the Brewers and the Cardinals. Now, the Brewers have won 9 of their last 10, and I tell you what, they're going to call them the Brewers bats. These guys have been hitting the baseball. Prince Fielder, Betancourt, McGee have been relentless against pitchers since the All-Star break. And they're facing the Cardinals tonight, who are only 3 games out. Now, here's the stat you want to keep an eye on. The Brewers have beat the Cardinals 6 out of the 9 matchups this season against the Cardinals. Now, I'm not counting the Cardinals out because they can swing the bat. They got Albert Pujols and company. Whoever wins this division obviously is going to be the playoffs because it looks like the wild card is going to be the Braves. But this is going to be a very, very fun race to see as it heads down to the wire. Now, another race, you look at the NL West. You have the San Francisco Giants who have really been slumping. I don't know what's going on with them. They are they've lost 8 of their last 10 games and now only have a half game lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks, who we talked about last week, have a really, really soft schedule against sub-500 teams. And I tell you what, if the Diamondbacks get hot like they were in June, at the end of May and June, where they won 7, 8, 9, 10 games in a row, they could seal this division up, and all of a sudden the San Francisco Giants are battling the Braves for the wild card spot. Who would have thought that? Defending world champs. About 40-some-odd games to go in Major League Baseball, so a lot of baseball to go at this point in early August, but a lot of exciting division races for Major League Baseball. This has been your Major League Baseball recap. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with me. Got a couple other stories I want to get into tonight. First, let's talk NFL. Now, I'm not going to get into X's and O's like we did last week with NFL. Next week, I'm going to break down division by division by division. I'm going to give you my playoff teams for the NFL since preseason starts this weekend on Saturday night on NFL Network. My Cleveland Browns take on the defending world champion Green Bay Packers in the first game of preseason. So definitely check that out on NFL Network. Now, with that being said, the NFL players have basically let go of their long-held pincushion argument against testing for human growth hormones on this past Thursday. Now, if you remember, I talked about this when the lockout was going on. This is going to be a sticking point in this new CBA. I really believe that it is. The NFL, and I think people in general, really wanted to go with this type of testing, and it's going to happen. It's going to be the first U.S. sport to ever move towards blood screening for athletes for performance-enhancing drugs. Under the collective bargaining agreement, which was just signed recently, the National Football League Players Association, the goal is to basically take players' HGH testing, which is going to begin week one in the regular season. The NFL will screen for HGH testing, synthetic hormones that promote muscle growth and reduce recovery time. Now, while the exact protocol is not necessarily in place, anti-doping experts are applauding the NFL for being the first, again, U.S. major sport to implement this type of testing. Olympic athletes have been doing this testing for the past 7 years. Now, here's my thing on HGH. Now, as far as regular steroids, they've been testing for that for quite some time. We don't have to bring up Major League Baseball in detail here as far as how steroids have affected the game. Now, this may come to a shock to some. I'm not necessarily against this type of testing at all. And I think as we find out more about HGH and human growth hormone and how it can affect people in general, not necessarily athletes, until we get more long-term testing, I think at some point you'll see HGH and these sports used for medical reasons. I think that the drug, from what I know about it, and I may be speaking out of term here, if I am, you know, definitely get a hold of me here on the show, or you can contact me at Ryan_unsigned. I really think that at some point, HGH is going to be a legal substance in sports. If used under, now don't get me wrong, if used under the right medical supervision, and that's where the fine line is, how do you regulate it? Now, it is proven that, yes, it helps muscle growth. It reduces recovery time. That's huge for guys in the NFL. It really is. Now, we're going to find out starting week one how many of these guys are going to test positive for HGH. This could be a black eye for the NFL. The lockout isn't even a black eye, so I don't know if you can give the NFL a black eye. I don't know if necessarily your diehard fan is going to care if guys are getting suspended games for HGH. Now, and again, I'll go back to my point. I think at some point, HGH will be legal if they can find a way to regulate it and use it under the correct medical use with the team trainers. And that's a big if, and getting the X's and O's and the ins and outs of how that's going to be administered. That's just my take on it. I think at some point in the future, HGH will be allowed under correct medical supervision, not necessarily in the NFL, but in other sports as well. Maybe not the Olympics, because that's a more of a purity sport. Baseball, you have your purists as well. But I think, you know, in some sports like maybe basketball and especially the NFL, they're taking the first step here for HGH testing. The next step is, you know, using it in the correct manner for which it was meant for, and that's healing. That's just my take on it. Now, here's a feel-good story, and much like Jeff Sack said earlier in the show, this is a feel-good story. We don't have enough feel-good stories, and here's one for you right now. The gentleman's name is Oscar Pistorius. Now, Oscar Pistorius will become the first amputee athlete to compete at the Able Body World Championships after being named to the South African squad. The 24-year-old double amputee who competes on carbon fiber legs will race the 400-meter and the 4x400-meter relay. The event begins in South Korea on August the 27th. And this is a quote from Oscar. "It will be a great day for when I set out on the track, and I hope to do my country proud. This will be the highest profile and the most prestigious able body event I have ever competed in, and I will face the highest caliber athletes from across the planet." An International Association of Athletics Federation, the IAAF, originally banned Oscar, and this was overturned in 2008, allowing Pistorius to compete against able-bodied athletes. The IAAF ruling says that his blades or his carbon fire legs were giving him an unfair advantage. I'm glad they overruled on this. I'm going to keep abreast on this because I'd like to see how this gentleman performs in this event. I wish nothing but the best for him. I don't necessarily think, you know, he's going to win it. It'd be amazing if he does. I'll tell you that. It would be amazing. But the fact that this guy is basically on two carbon fiber legs and is competing in the world championship relay races and the 400-meter race is an absolute wonderful story. We don't have enough of these in sports as far as I'm concerned. So best of luck to Mr. Oscar Pistorius. Now, lately here on Unsigned, we've been doing some humorous stories, and here's another one I found. Like I said, there's never a shortage of these. There really isn't, you know, but this one, we'll just title this Surf's Up. Cowabunga, dude. Three Mexican nationals attempted to illegally land their boat on a California Huntington beach this past Sunday, about a mile away from where crowds were forming to watch a professional surfing contest. Lifeguards spotted the small fishing boats around 8:30 a.m. local time, but when the men realized they had been spotted, they turned back into sea and were seen throwing packages overboard, the Orange County Register reported. A number of people were on the beach at the time for the U.S. Open of Surfing. It is believed that the men on the boat were smuggling drugs across the border from Mexico. All three men were arrested and taken into custody by U.S. Border Patrol agents on suspicion of smuggling drugs into the U.S. illegally. Now, there's two sides of this. One, I'm glad they caught these guys because I think we have enough of that going on in this country, one. Two, it's a sad story, but also it's funny. I can just imagine being out there for the event. You know, hey, man, surf's up. Yeah, man, surf, you know. Gonna catch a killer wave today at the U.S. Open of Surfing. Hey, the Mexicans are here, man. They're bringing some goods. All of a sudden, it turned into a Cheech and Chong skit. But I figured I'd pass that story on to you. Three Mexicans arrested for smuggling in drugs while trying to dock about a mile away from the U.S. Open of surfing. Did they not see the huge crowd on the beach when they were coming in? Well, hey, that about does it for our show tonight. A big shout out to at Cooker Carolyn. Definitely check her cookbook out on Twitter, at Cooker Carolyn. A lot of summertime left. Labor Day is not that far away, as scary as that sounds. So you need some recipes for that cookout coming up. Definitely check out at Cooker Carolyn for a copy of that cookbook. I want to thank Mr. Jeff Sack, as always, for coming on. Great stuff. World-class act individual. One of the best. I also want to thank Micah and Omnis TV for doing a great job, as always. My name is Ryan. Seems harder to enjoy the finer things of life. Until next time, take care, everybody. Have a good one.